From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, September 6th through Friday, September 10th, 2021. This installment of our program is airing during the weekend marking the 20th anniversary of 9/11. We'll be commemorating this historic milestone that painfully and ironically is playing out for all the world to see mere days after the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, an operation that many people on both sides of the political divide consider to have been botched big time, indeed. Stand by, as we're about to embark upon a bold hour of Black Belt Talk Radio, in which your tolerance for hearing different but legitimate points of view will be tested. We've got lefties, we've got righties, and we've got thoughtful independents waiting in the wings to tickle your brain with notions and emotions. Try not to get angry. Just maintain an appropriate amount of educated skepticism. We'll hear from Vince Benedetto in Scranton, Pennsylvania, talking about the U.S. pullout from Afghanistan. Dan Mandis in Nashville, discussing President Biden's sinking approval ratings. Kyle Bailey in Roseburg, Oregon, addressing the impact COVID-19 has had and is continuing to have on his community. Richard Neer in the Big Apple on the kickoff of the new NFL season. And two very special tributes to the memories of those who lost their lives or their loved ones on that fateful day 2 decades ago. From syndicated talk show host Joe Pags Pagliarulo in San Antonio and Claire Carter of Good For You Radio in New York City. Opinionated yappers from across the country with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices sharing their observations as well as the feelings of their target constituents with whom they often do their daily dance of affirmation in a fragmented, noisy world in which we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap, heard coast to coast and around the world on great radio stations in the U.S. and the U.K. An examination of the past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media and played out in the theater of your mind. Information's gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. Fasten your earbuds. Speaking of which, this installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap is being sponsored in part by the good folks at C. Crane, makers and distributors of fine radios and radio-oriented equipment. Okay, here we go. Joining us is Kevin Casey, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about stories on talk shows in America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10 this week, the NFL 2021 season kicks off. America's most popular sport started the new season Thursday night with Tom Brady and the Super Bowl champion Bucks squeaking out a victory over the Dallas Cowboys in the last moments of the game, 31-29.
The NFL has had to cope with the spike in COVID Delta variant numbers and the potential for on-field political demonstrations, although it seems to be past that now, as it begins a new 17-game season, up a game from the traditional 16-game system that had been the norm for years.
At number 9, a tie between U.S.-China relations and the removal of Trump appointees. Our problems with China are growing on a number of fronts: cybersecurity breaches, the coronavirus pandemic, human rights abuses, and what the Biden administration describes as coercive and unfair trade practices. Add to that the CCP's new relationship with the Taliban. Biden called President Xi this week for a 90-minute conversation, the second such call since he assumed the presidency.
Meantime, the White House sparked a mini political brouhaha by asking 11 Trump administration appointees to resign their positions on the advisory boards at military academies or be fired. These include Kellyanne Conway, Sean Spicer, and H.R. McMaster.
At number 8, a four-way tie between voting legislation, race relations, immigration reform, and the California recall. Problems at the southern border continue to be a huge issue, especially on News Talk Radio, which is one of the only platforms in America to be addressing it head on.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed on to legislation that further tightens state election laws, fueling the fires of racial tension in America. In the California recall circus, conservative African-American candidate Larry Elder encountered racism when a woman in a monkey mask threw an egg at him, nearly hitting him at one of his campaign stops.
At number 7, a tie between the January 6 investigation and Trump's continuing election fraud claims. Meantime, all eyes are looking ahead to the so-called Justice for J6 rally set for September 18 by Trump supporters.
As the former president takes advantage of Biden's shaky post-Afghanistan approval ratings to make the case that he's on a viable comeback trail.
At number 6 this week, climate change, wildfires, and hurricanes. As James Taylor would put it, we're seeing a lot of fire and rain.
And climate change is clearly no longer a fringe issue.
At number 5, the Texas abortion law. Again, Texas Governor Greg Abbott is at the center of a brewing political storm as the Lone Star State's new abortion law mounts a serious threat to Roe versus Wade.
You can be sure this issue will be staying with us for months and perhaps years to come.
At number 4 this week, the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Can you believe that 2 whole decades have passed since that fateful day in 2001?
The 20-year milestone coming on the heels of the botched Afghanistan withdrawal makes this year's commemoration even more painful than usual.
At number 3 this week, Afghanistan. Most Americans agree that withdrawing from the 20-year conflict was the right thing to do, but are significantly disturbed by the lack of planning and poor execution that accompanied it.
Stay tuned. We have some eye-opening insights into America's handling of the war in Afghanistan coming on this program that you might find extremely enlightening.
And number 2 this week, Biden's approval ratings tied with the economy. Afghanistan, the handling of the COVID crisis, and policies that could be leading to inflation have given the president's approval ratings a real battering this past week.
Although there are a number of polls and breakouts involved in this kind of research, it's generally safe to say Biden's approval ratings have plummeted to below 50%.
And at number 1 this week, COVID-19 vaccines, schools, masks, and mandates. The pandemic is back at the top of the talkers' topic chart, with vaccine hesitancy and the debate over civil liberties at the core of the contention. Emotions are flaring, especially with schools trying to open amidst rising COVID-19 Delta variant cases being reported among children.
The president's Thursday night speech, outlining sweeping vaccine mandates that'll impact over 100 million people, added fuel to the fire of debate, further separating the left and the right, the Democrats and the Republicans, on the issue. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Afghanistan is top of mind this 9/11 weekend, some 20 years after that tragic day in 2001. We're joined by Vince Benedetto in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He's the CEO of the Bold Gold Media Group, the broadcasting company that owns our Scranton-Wilkes-Barre affiliate, 94.3 The Talker. Vince has an impressive military and intelligence background. He's a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy, a former Air Force captain, an Air Force OSI special agent, where he worked on counterintelligence, counterterrorism, and felony-level investigative efforts for the Department of Defense. Well, Vince, you have a military background, and you have had experience in the Middle East. And I'm sure that everything that's been happening with Afghanistan has certainly caught your attention, and I'm sure you have your own thoughts about it. So here, as we are on the other side of a conversation that you and I had several weeks ago on this program about the forthcoming exit from Afghanistan, now that we've exited and the news has been made, what are your thoughts about how we did it? Did we do it the right way, the wrong way? Could we have done it a different way? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it reinforced my concerns. The events of late have reinforced my concerns that I had originally. You know, I always thought that really, why are we leaving Afghanistan? I always thought that it was an enormous success, that the 20 years since 9/11, how it was handled. And I always thought that if anything, we mismessaged it. You know, our leadership and our statesmanship was lacking in that area. The narrative always should have been, which I think is the truth, that, you know, after 9/11, we had to do what we had to do. We sent in tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of troops and equipment and resources into that area to rightfully bring to justice those who attacked us. And the story, the good news story was, we are not in a ongoing 20-year war. You know, we are not in day-to-day active engagement anymore. In fact, the success here is we've managed to bring down our troop levels to just a couple thousand troops. And with that couple thousand, a testament to the superiority of our military, our technology, our know-how, our intelligence, with just this very small footprint, far smaller than we keep in other parts of the world that we've been since World War II that are much more friendly to us, we've managed to keep this country stable enough to stop it from becoming a hotbed of terrorism. And boy, what a remarkable thing we've been able to do. There are no combat operations happening on a day-to-day or even weekly basis. We haven't lost a life here in over a year and a half. This is a story of success 20 years on, a small footprint of people keeping our eyes and ears on the ground, the intelligence that is needed to be there in the country. You cannot replace human intelligence. All the satellites in the world, all the technology in the world cannot displace one-on-one relationships and source networks. That's all we're doing there now to ensure that 9/11 never happens again. That nation, that big country, does not devolve into a hotbed of terrorism ever again. There was no clamoring for us to leave Afghanistan from the American people. I think most people, if you ask them the question, do you think we should fight endless wars and leave these faraway, distant places? Most people are going to say yes. But I think if our leaders would have explained, both administrations, frankly, the Trump and the Biden administration, this in those terms, there would have been overwhelming support to maintain that small presence there. And just the humiliation alone that we endured exiting, it would have been worth the price.
In so many ways, totally different types of administrations come up with the same idea, and that is we got to get out of there. How did that happen?
My opinion on it would be simply, you know, just being a student of history, is when you pick a political objective and then try to bend narratives to meet that objective or a promise that was made at some point versus using the reality on the ground to inform your decision along the way. When you try to fit facts, you know, you miss things, right? It's like, and I think that's probably what happened is in the halls of our government, a view of this evolved that we had to get out of there. And that was important to make some kind of statement that we were ultimately going to pull every single troop out of there. And once that became the objective, the how do we do it became less relevant, and just we need to do it became the mission. And I think really what bothered veterans and what bothers military members and what bothers probably you and me the most isn't even the leaving. It was the seemingly unending willingness of our administration to continue to be humiliated in an ongoing way throughout the withdrawal. I mean, I kept waiting and just assuming that the president was going to come out at some point and address the nation and say something like, you know, my fellow Americans, you know, mistakes have clearly been made. We underestimated the speed with which the Afghan government would fold and certainly the speed with which the Taliban would expand. So, and this is what I was waiting for. So upon my orders, you know, our military have retaken the airfields and are in the process of pushing back our perimeters to make sure all Americans have time to safely evacuate. And this I say to you, the Taliban, you know, if you dare harm one single American or block their safe passage to the airports, our military has acting and standing orders to immediately respond with overwhelming force. You know, once every single American and ally is safely out of the country, only then will I reevaluate our potential departure from the country, which is our wish to leave. But if we can't leave because of things like this, then we'll stay there and forever if we have to. Mm-hmm. That should have been the messaging. Because that's what Americans wanted to hear. Right. They wanted to hear strength, and they kept seeing humility. And like, why are the United States military being pushed around, you know, by this ragtag group of terrorists?
Wouldn't it have been to the Taliban's advantage to play ball with that because they're getting rid of the Americans and now they could take over the country? It would almost be as if we could be allied with them in the exit because they gained by it. Why would they want to stand in the way of it going smoothly? I don't get it.
Well, and I think that was part of the gamble that the administration continues to take, that if they try to treat the Taliban with a certain amount of dignity and respect like you would a modern day, power arising or overthrowing a country to try to establish initially diplomatic relations with them. The problem is, you know, all of us who dealt with this enemy right, know that this is futile, and we're shocked to see it happening, where the U.S. State Department, in ongoing discussions with the Taliban, which with no leverage. You know, I think that's the thing. We've given up all the leverage. And I think Americans are rightfully shocked that all this equipment was left there, that our enemies now have, you know, state-of-the-art equipment that some of our allies don't have, that no doubt is going to be used against us in the future. And, you know, I predict that Afghanistan is never going to go away now. You know, for the small footprint that we could have had there, now we're going to have China coming in, Russia coming in. We're going to have terrorism blossoming from that area. And we're going to see more loss of life, and we're going to have to spend more blood and treasure, you know, for decades to come. And we're going to be less safe because of bad political decisions.
That's Vince Benedetto, CEO of the Bold Gold Media Group, the broadcasting company that owns our Scranton-Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania affiliate, 94.3 The Talker. Vince, a former Air Force captain, has an extensive military and intelligence background. Coming up next, a trip to Nashville, Tennessee, and a look at President Biden's plummeting approval ratings. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Greetings, fellow radio lovers. Thank goodness for Sea Crane. Sea Crane specializes in high-quality radios and radio-oriented audio products. And now, Sea Crane carries their very own CC Solar Observer. When the power suddenly goes out, and that happens a lot these days, do you get that sinking feeling? Do I have a flashlight? Do I have a radio? The CC Solar Observer, AM, FM, and weather radio will keep you informed during and after a powerless event. And it doesn't require electricity. Sea Crane CC Solar Observer can be powered by the hand crank, solar panel, or common AA batteries, has a built-in flashlight, and has the ability to charge a smartphone in a pinch. A dependable emergency radio with superior reception is something everyone should have. I recommend it. To order the CC Solar Observer, call Sea Crane now at 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-8863, or visit seacrane.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. This past week, as a matter of fact, this past month, has proven to be tough on President Biden's approval ratings. Let's check in with talk show host and program director Dan Mandis of WWTN-FM in Nashville to get his perspective on the situation. How's this playing out on your airwaves, on your show, and at your radio station?
Well, I don't necessarily, you know, do the play-by-play, blow-by-blow daily. You know, how is the president polling today? What are his approval numbers? But when you see how well he was doing for the first, you know, 4 or 5 months that he was in office, and then you look at how abysmal it's been since the whole Afghanistan fiasco, I think it is abundantly clear that the American people are paying attention to the mistakes that Joe Biden has made. So when you see so many different polls, that definitely does show a pattern of, well, the American people, they clearly are taking notice that Joe Biden has really screwed up the Afghanistan situation. And the interesting thing about these polls are that there's a lot of people that approve of the fact that we got out of Afghanistan. But what they don't like and what they don't approve of is how we did it. And it comes down to competence. Are people confident in the competence of our president? And I think a lot of people are taking a look at his execution of the withdrawal of Afghanistan, and they're saying no, they're not confident.
I kind of get the feeling, and tell me what you think, that a lot of the high approval ratings that Biden was enjoying was because so many people in the country were happy that it wasn't Trump. The Trump lovers, of course, were not happy with Biden, and the Trump lovers love Trump. But it's so polarized that Biden was sort of given a pass because he wasn't Trump. And then all of a sudden, you know, as Trump veers off into his own thing and time goes by and it's almost a year, what, 8-9 months already, Biden's now being judged on his own circumstances. And a lot of people I talk to say, oh, he's no better than Trump, but we don't want Trump either. There's this large segment of the public, and many of them don't listen to or call talk radio, but, you know, we live in a bigger world, that they don't like either of these guys. And they're very depressed. Have you picked up on that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I like to use this saying on my show, and I borrowed it from somebody else, but, you know, there's nowhere to rest your eyes. So, for example, with Joe Biden, everywhere you look, there is a failed policy, whether it's on our border, whether it's in Afghanistan. We've got COVID raging out of control yet again. We've got inflation going up. We had the job numbers last week. So everywhere you look, there is a failed policy with Joe Biden. But I do think that it's telling, and again, going back to the polling, I saw something the other day where 1 in 5 Biden supporters now regret that they voted for Joe Biden. I call it Biden regret syndrome, a BRS. You know, people are just looking at what we got or what they got and what they voted for, and they're realizing that, yeah, they didn't do a great job in assessing whether or not Biden was going to do a good job. But see, the people who like Joe Biden and the people that think that astonishingly that he is doing a good job, I'm just going to say that I don't necessarily think that they're paying real close attention to policy. I just think, as you said, he's not Donald Trump and he doesn't have an R next to his name. So Biden is going to get a pass from a certain segment of the Democrat Party. But I think that there's a lot of Democrats who are looking at this and realizing not only that Joe Biden isn't what he, you know, what they thought he was going to be, but neither is Kamala Harris, which tells you that in 2024, the Democrats are going to be really, really suffering because Harris isn't ready for the job. Biden never was ready for the job. And who are they going to run against Donald Trump? Because I think it is abundantly clear that the former president is getting ready for another run.
Okay, so you're confident that Trump will run, and I gather from you, you're confident if he does, he'll win against what at least the trajectory now is the battered image of Biden and Harris. Is it not possible, stepping back, taking into account that 3 years in modern times may as well be 300 years? Think about how things change every 3 days, let alone 3 weeks, 3 months, or 3 years. Is it possible that in 2024, and this is just speculation on your part, it's kind of a softball, is it possible that neither Biden nor Trump will be the candidate of their parties in 2024, and that new heroes for the Democrats and the Republicans will have emerged, and it'll be a whole different ballgame? What do you think of that possibility?
I think that's a big possibility, certainly on the left. I mean, it's clear that the Democrats have to do something. As I said, Biden and Harris, they're not going to cut it. As a matter of fact, there was that poll the other day that showed that 40% of Democrats would rather have someone other than Joe Biden as their nominee in 2024. As far as Donald Trump goes, you are right. I mean, we have no idea what's going to happen in the next 3 years. There could be somebody who comes out and sort of strikes out on their own. But the thing is, the Republican Party is so polarized for Donald Trump. One of the big stories today, as a matter of fact, is that Governor Ron DeSantis out there in Florida. You know, he has been long rumored to be somebody who's going to run for president of the United States. Now, as far as I know, he never denied it, but he also never confirmed it. So just this week, he came out and he said, no, this is all nonsense. I'm not going to run. To me, that was a clear sign that Trump is going to run. He is going to come to the decision, or has already come to this to the decision, that he is going to run. And so DeSantis obviously got the word that Trump is going to be the nominee because the former president is so polarizing within the Republican Party. I mean, I think I saw a poll. I want to say that vast majority of Republicans want Donald Trump to be the guy that runs in 2024. But you are right. You don't know what's going to happen in the next 3 years. And so, at least to me, although it looks very clear that Trump right now will be the nominee for the Republicans, anything could happen. Anything could happen to Trump. Anything could happen within the Democrat Party as well. That's what's great about politics. You just never know.
And also, you don't hear in the discussion, I mean, it does exist, but you don't hear in the discussion when we hear in the news and in the broader media speculation about Donald Trump running in 24,
all of these legal problems that he has hanging over his head. It's almost as if that doesn't exist right now. And I would think that's a wild card in the whole deck, that he could be indicted. Different stories about him could come out. There's that whole issue. What do you think of that?
You are absolutely right. In my answer to the previous question, I said anything could happen.
Right.
That's part of that anything could happen. I mean, you know, you talk about his tax returns. I mean, you talk about, you know, the January 6th, you know, commission or the panel. Anything could happen with former President Donald Trump. There's all kinds of things that are swirling around, and you never know. The Democrats, they could manufacture anything. Some legit things could come up as well.
That's talk show host and program director Dan Mandis of Supertalk 99.7 WTN in Nashville. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. COVID-19 continues to rage via its Delta variant, affecting cities large and small across America. Let's check in now with Kyle Bailey, who serves as a news anchor and newsmaker interviewer, along with his positions as news director and program director of our affiliate in Roseburg, Oregon, KQEN. And let's see how things are going in his neck of the woods. So, Kyle, before we even start, tell me a little bit about Roseburg. We're so happy to be on your station, and it sounds like a lovely place to live.
Yeah, Douglas County, Roseburg is the county seat. It's a county of about 120,000 people. We're in southern Oregon, about an hour south of Eugene, 3 hours south of Portland, right along Interstate 5. We've got all kinds of things around us. Crater Lake National Park, 2 hours to the east. Oregon Coast, 90 minutes to the west. We're in the midst of a rapidly growing wine region here with many varietals being grown quite successfully. We've also got a Shakespeare Festival about an hour and a half away. And this area also known for great fishing up the North Umpqua River, which actually brings in folks from around the world.
How would you describe the political makeup of the population in Roseburg?
Well, Roseburg and Douglas County definitely trends conservative. Most of our local elected leaders are Republicans, and that's an interesting factor being in Oregon, which is known as such a progressively Democratic state. Most of the members of Congress, 4 out of 5 currently, are Democrats, Democratic governor. In fact, Republicans haven't had the office of governor since the 80s in Oregon, but rural Oregon kind of goes to a different beat, and so it's a very conservative area.
How is COVID playing out in your community?
For much of the pandemic, we were actually one of the lowest impacted counties in the nation. At one point, Douglas County and over in the Maui area were two of the lowest per capita numbers of COVID cases. It's changed, though, with this Delta variant coming in. Our area of Southern Oregon right now, one of the hardest hit areas in the state. Just a couple of days ago, 13 deaths reported in the county over a 2-day period.
Do you have hospital facilities that are able to handle it, or are they reaching their max? And when that happens, what do you do?
They are very close to their max. Mercy Medical Center here has done a great job with taking their progressive care unit, making some changes. So essentially, it's a larger intensive care unit. But also, because of bed space, we've got folks who have gone to other parts of Oregon where beds are more readily available. And even in a few cases, have gone up to Washington or down to California if specialized equipment was needed.
How has it impacted the economy of your area?
Well, one of the aspects right now with the number of cases that we have going on is someone gets COVID, suddenly you've got a bunch of people from a business or an office in quarantine. You drive down the road and you see that the restaurant that normally is open into the evening is now only open part of the day. You read between the lines or you do some checking and you find out that because of COVID cases, they've got a number of staff out. And so they've had to change their business hours. Some places are open less days per week, things like that.
Are people holding up emotionally?
It's interesting because last year when we got into COVID and all that was going on, we not only had COVID-19, there was the political tension of the presidential election, the race relations issue that was popping up all over around the nation and particularly up to the north in Portland. But then we also had historic wildfires. Just this week, last year, we had the Archie Creek fire that destroyed about 160 homes, 35, 40 minutes to the east of me, heading up towards Crater Lake, where a big forest area essentially has been turned into a moonscape. So you want stress. We've had stress, and it definitely we have seen an uptick in crime in terms of people who just have kind of had it. The folks that run the shelter to help folks that are being battered report, you know, big increase in cases over the last number of months, and you see that even on the type of arrests that are taking place. And certainly not everybody is, you know, this is not across the board, but you're seeing an increase there in those issues tied to fatigue from the pandemic.
What about the issues that are playing out around the country in terms of schools and mandates and masks and vaccines? How political has it gotten? And is there a tremendous amount of polarization?
Yeah, there definitely is. In some areas around Douglas County, it's been really diverse. A couple of the school districts have been calling out against some of these state mandates. Of course, Oregon has some stronger ones than a number of other states. It was school back in session. That's become a big issue. One of the local school boards even had their meeting a couple of days ago go virtual because there were some parents, or at least a small group, that were very unhappy with some of the new rules and wanted the district to make some changes in spite of the state guidance that they're under. And just because of the tension, they actually went to having a virtual meeting just for safety concerns.
Do you find that this crisis gives you and your colleagues at the radio station and the communications company that you work at the opportunity to help the public? And how have you been doing that?
Well, one of the things early on when COVID hit, it was very daunting. I mean, I call it phases of the pandemic. It was suddenly one week. You were getting press release after press release about this is closed, that's closed, this is happening, that's not happening. And then it keeps shifting back and forth over time. Early in the summer, things were happening again. Now some of them are, some of them aren't. And so you have all that news, and sometimes it was a bit daunting. And I know for myself personally, it was just you would go home and just be mentally exhausted. And it occurred to me that a lot of other people, for different reasons, were feeling very mentally exhausted. And one of the things I focused on doing since March of last year is periodically reaching out to the mental health community, to counseling folks, to people in law enforcement, to get guests on to address the issues and to give people some ideas, some sort of be their first step to realizing, hey, maybe they do need to get some mental health help and not feel like that's a stigma they don't want to work around.
That's Kyle Bailey of KQEN, our affiliate in Roseburg, Oregon. Coming up next, we'll pivot to New York City and a look at the brand new NFL season, followed by our tribute to the 20th anniversary of 9/11. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
This report is brought to you by Genesis 2 Project, G2P. Recently, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, released a preliminary report on possible threats posed by UFOs, now known as Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, UAP, and the progress the Department of Defense UAP Task Force has made in understanding any threats. Dr. J.C. Van Valkenburg is a former Los Alamos National Lab biophysicist who has been working with G2P to bring scientifically sound UAP data to the public.
G2P has released the first scientifically authenticated documentation of UAPs, including images captured with infrared technology. Primo Forensics performed the digital forensic analysis.
In tandem with the ODNI report, these data support the development of relevant processes, policies, technologies, and training for the U.S. military and government personnel upon encountering UAP. Visit Genesis2Project.com.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation.
This is the first weekend of the brand new NFL season. Let's check in with our sports correspondent, Richard Neer, of all sports talk radio station WFAN New York. Where does football stand, in the pantheon of American sports? Is it still the top sport in America?
I would say so. Yep, still number one. I mean, certainly the Olympics came and went without a whole lot of notice. Tennis, U.S. Open, Ryder Cup golf, all that stuff. Getting some excitement on sports talk radio, but mostly it is football.
Mm-hmm. And baseball, you didn't even mention baseball. That shocks me.
Well, that's kind of a hangover from my New York-ism. The Mets and Yankees currently are struggling a bit.
How about the 17-game season? Usually it's 16 games and then the playoffs. How will the 17-game season affect the game, if it will at all?
Well, the fear is that there will be more injuries. You know, it's another time when guys have to be in shape and the pounding and everything else. So it may take its toll on some veteran teams, more mature teams, maybe a team with a 43-year-old quarterback. I don't know. But I think generally speaking, it's going to be great for the fans. You get an extra week of football. You get some more playoff opportunities. So should be a lot of fun.
How about the COVID factor?
COVID, I mean, the NFL of all sports has taken a very, very strong stand. Basically, they're saying if you don't get vaccinated and you come down with COVID and your team has to miss a game, the team's going to forfeit the game. You're not going to get paid. The other team is going to forfeit and not get paid. So there are very, very strong regulations in a big price to pay if you don't take care of yourself. Now, if you are vaccinated and you get a breakthrough, well, that's a different story.
And the political aspect of it, it doesn't seem that long ago that the NFL was at the epicenter of racial politics and a lot of controversies. Do you see that being a factor this year at all?
I really don't. I think that COVID has taken over people's imagination in terms of how they deal with it vis-a-vis sport. I don't really see a lot of politics, but you never know. I mean, an incident could happen that spurs it. I think that the NFL has been very careful about demonstrations on the field during the national anthem and things like that. Roger Goodell made it clear that he thought that punishing Kaepernick for kneeling all those years ago was a mistake on his part. But I think the NFL would prefer to be distant from politics if it has any choice in the matter.
That's legendary Big Apple sports radio personality and prolific author Richard Neer of WFAN New York. Check him out at richardneer.com. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. It's been 20 years since our world was rocked on September 11th, 2001. Nationally syndicated talk show host Joe Pags Pagliarulo was inspired to write and record a song dedicated to the memory of that horrific event and the countless lives it took and affected. The song is titled Tuesday Morning.
Well, as you know, I was a music major in college, didn't take journalism, although I became a journalist, didn't take communications, although I became a communicator. I was a music guy. I grew up loving music, playing saxophone, singing the best I could, playing the piano, whatever. And you know that I inject a lot of music in my talk show. I think that makes it different and it makes it stand out. My wife and I were talking probably 2 months ago. And we're like, can you believe it's been 20 years? I was a TV news anchor in Lansing, Michigan when 9/11 happened. So I worked a 16-hour day at the Capitol in Lansing trying to figure out what the heck happened. And it hit us so hard. And I thought that I had the capabilities to do something with it. She was like, hey, what do you think? Maybe write a song. I said, that's not a bad idea. So for about 2 months, and I mean this, the words Tuesday morning kept on going on in my head. And the reason why they were going on in my head, because it was a beautiful day. It was a Tuesday morning. As I was watching television that day, trying to convince myself that a twin-engine plane with a drunk guy or somebody who had a heart attack accidentally slammed into the tower, as I was trying to convince myself of that, I'm looking at the video on Fox or NBC or ABC, whoever I was watching, and it was a beautiful day. And September 11th in New York City isn't necessarily always beautiful. It could be overcast. It could be getting cold out. It could be switching to fall somewhat. It was right. A beautiful, sunny, big, white, puffy cloud day. So Tuesday morning was going on and on in my head. And I sat down at the piano about a week ago now, maybe a week and a half ago. And in 15 minutes, I wrote the entire thing.
Oh, wow.
And I played it out. And Tuesday morning was the hook. It just had to be. And I was just, I didn't want it to be this overtly anti this or pro that. It was just me singing and playing a reflection of what happened that day and kind of where we are today. That's confusing to me. Cool. And it came together pretty nicely. Yeah, I wrote it. I sang it. Some people think I shouldn't have sung it. Somebody else should have sung it, whatever. I do all the harmonies, and I'm the saxophone player on it, too. So it turned out really well, I think. And hopefully people will like it. They'll listen to it. They'll play it, and it'll bring some sort of an emotion back to them.
Well, I'm going to play it right here on this talk show, a very special event. We make way for music, and I couldn't think of a better reason than to play Joe Pag's original composition, Tuesday Morning.
The sun shined on the apple as folks got on their way. Was a gorgeous Tuesday morning, tons to do that fateful day. The Monday rain subsided, leaving big white puffy clouds. The quiet serenity would soon give way as things got very loud. Freedom was attacked, our whole way of life. Their sick minds were packed with hatred and with strife. Tuesday morning, change without warning. We're still mourning those we lost that day. 20 years went by, still we wonder why evil attacked freedom from the sky. And dads and kids were set for another day. Jobs to do, tests to take, working for their pay. Dinner out, maybe a show. They all had a plan. They had no clue that evil loomed ready to attack our land. Freedom was attacked, cowards on those flights. 20 years we've all looked back, standing for what's right. Tuesday morning, change without warning. We're still mourning those we lost that day. 20 years went by, still we wonder why evil attacked freedom from the sky. Decades past, the worst day for our land. You'd think we'd be joined as one, together hand in hand. Our resolve has been shaken, our love has moved aside. It's time we remembered who we are and restored American pride. We came together on that day, determined one and all. Generation later, we're divided, they hope we fall. Tuesday morning, change without warning. We're still mourning those we lost that day. 20 years went by, still we wonder why.
The song is titled Tuesday Morning, and it's a tribute to 9/11, written and performed by nationally syndicated radio talk show host Joe Pags Pagliarulo. If you'd like to hear it again and see the touching video that accompanies it, please visit the platform rumble.com and look up Joe Pags Pagliarulo. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. And now for something very special and touching. Health and social news commentator Claire Carter of Good For You Radio has written and performed a heartfelt piece about her memories of 9/11 and the months that immediately followed the tragic event. The following production piece features Claire backed up by an instrumental version of the song My Friend Is Going Away from the musical group Gun Hill Road's new album, What Year Is This?
2 months after the attacks on the World Trade Center, I walked down to the site to pay my respects to those who had died. There were some makeshift memorial sites where people had left cards and notes, and I wrote down some of what they left because I wanted to remember, and I want to share that with you right now. Quote, if you love someone, put their name in a circle, because hearts can break, but circles go on forever. Rene Girardot wrote this on a poster sent by the 5th and 6th graders from Carbondale Community School in Colorado. The poster was part of a memorial display on a fence at St. Paul's Cathedral, close to the World Trade Center. And then there was this written on a card left at a memorial site overlooking the World Trade Center. We can reach out and give, and then reach out some more. We can help make a difference like never before. We can take a close look deep within our own hearts. Stop any prejudice right where it starts. We can vow to respect every faith, every creed, knowing each offers comforts to spirits in need. We can make this America's best shining hour and ask for the wisdom to help guide our power. We can keep candles burning and proud flags unfurl. We can pray for our nation. We can pray for the world. We owe it to ourselves, to our country, to each American who has suffered so deeply, to always remember September 11th in our hearts and do whatever we can to make a difference in the world. And then, written author unknown, a typewritten note left at the same memorial site. Half of the note had even weathered away. Quote, if I knew that it would be the last time that I'd see you fall asleep, I would touch you, tuck you in more tightly, and pray the Lord your soul to keep. If I knew it would be the last time that I'd see you walk out the door, I would give you a hug and a kiss and call you back for one more. If I knew it would be the last time I'd hear your voice lifted up in praise, I would videotape each action and work so I could play them back day after day. If I knew it would be the last time I could spare a minute or two to stop and say, I love you, instead of assuming you would know I do. If I knew it would be the last time I would be there to share your day, well, I'm sure you'll have so many more, so I can just let this one slip away. There will always be another day to say, I love you. And certainly, there will be another chance. And then a child wrote, I love you, Daddy. We miss you so much. Lisa, we miss you all. We pay our respects, and we remember all those who died, all those who survive. We will never forget.
That's Claire Carter of Good For You Radio, backed up by the highly creative musical ensemble Gun Hill Road, with a touching tribute to those who lost their lives on 9/11/2001 and the loved ones they left behind. You can tune into Good For You Radio at talkerslive.com and hear more from Claire Carter. And to learn more about Gun Hill Road, please visit gunhillroadmusic.com. And that does it for this latest installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation, looking back at the week of Monday, September 6th through Friday, September 10th, 2021. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, that unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com.
And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. The Michael Harrison Wrap. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications in conjunction with Talkers Magazine and Talk Media Network. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved.